From Washington, I'm David Schultz, and this is Talking Tax. You're going to be hearing a lot about Chevron in the news over the next few weeks, but it'll have really nothing to do with the oil company. Chevron is the name of the landmark Supreme Court case from the 80s that shifted the balance of power in government away from courts and toward federal agencies, and later this spring, it could be overturned. The case, in which, yes, Chevron was the original defendant, gave rise to the concept of Chevron deference, the idea that when the text of the law is vague, judges should defer to a federal agency's interpretation of that law, as long as the interpretation makes sense. Early this year, the court heard oral arguments in a pair of cases that say Chevron makes judges too deferential to the executive branch, and that judges need to take a more active role in interpreting and reinterpreting vague statutes. With an opinion from the court coming sometime before its current term ends in June, we thought we'd look at the implications on tax policy if the Chevron case gets struck down. We rang up Kristen Hickman, professor at the University of Minnesota, who specializes in tax and administrative law, to tell us what to expect after the court hands down its opinion. She spoke to Bloomberg tax and accounting reporter Aaron Slowey about how a less deferential judiciary will affect tax policy, or whether it even will affect tax policy. But first, Hickman got into exactly what Chevron is and why some people really hate it.
Chevron is controversial because there has been, I think, some inconsistency in its application. There's disagreement over exactly how the doctrine is supposed to work. And in some people's minds, that means that the courts have abdicated their responsibilities for reviewing and ascertaining statutory meaning. It means that the balance of power in the government has shifted from courts to agencies in a way that arguably violates separation of powers. And for some people, it means that, the little guy is at a disadvantage vis-a-vis the government in litigation when there's disagreement.
So for tax regulations, when did Chevron first apply and what was the standard of review before then?
It's important, I think, to appreciate that judicial deference in the tax context and otherwise has been around for a long time, even before Chevron was decided in 1984. In 1979, the Supreme Court decided a case called National Muffler Dealers Association that described the standard for reviewing general authority treasury regulations. For many years after the Supreme Court decided Chevron, the courts more or less agreed that specific authority treasury regulations were eligible for Chevron deference, but the circuit courts and the tax court divided over whether Chevron and National Muffler deference were the same or different, and whether Chevron or National Muffler provided the proper standard for evaluating general authority treasury regulations, which is most treasury regulations. So the Supreme Court resolved that question in 2011 in Mayo Foundation for Medical Education and Research versus the United States, declaring that both specific and general authority treasury regulations carry the force and effect of law, and that Chevron provides the standard for evaluating all treasury regulations, concluding essentially that Chevron overturned National Muffler.
And so I know the justices are thinking about this issue. Like, where do they stand on Chevron? And like, what are the potential outcomes that we could be seeing in this ruling?
One of the interesting things about the pending cases concerning Chevron, known as Loper Bright and Relentless, is that the justices really are all over the map regarding what they think about Chevron, not just about whether or not to keep or overturn Chevron, but also about exactly how the Chevron doctrine works and what it requires. Justices Gorsuch and Thomas have been pretty clear in saying that the court should overturn Chevron, that they think it raises constitutional separation of powers issues. At oral argument, though, Justice Gorsuch characterized Chevron in much starker terms than I've described it here, suggesting that if the meaning of the statutory text, most apparently at issue, isn't clear on its face, then Chevron requires a review in court to defer. Justice Jackson at oral argument in the Relentless case seemed to suggest that if a statute does not expressly prevent an agency from acting within the sphere of its administrative responsibilities, then courts should defer to the agency's interpretation of the statute. Neither Justice Gorsuch nor Justice Jackson mentioned traditional tools of statutory interpretation or reasonableness at all. But I was at a symposium last year where Justice Kavanaugh emphasized the importance of judges applying traditional tools to try to determine statutory meaning for themselves before ever declaring the statute ambiguous and moving on to the reasonableness question. So to some extent, the divide among the justices is not just about whether or not to keep Chevron, but about what Chevron actually demands in terms of its inquiries. Having listened to the oral argument, many people think that the court will Kaiserize Chevron, using a term that Justice Barrett introduced. In Kaiser versus Welke a few years ago, the Supreme Court clarified another judicial deference standard for agency interpretations of agency regulations by drawing from an extensive body of precedent to take what had been a single sentence counseling deference and turning it into five separate criteria that had to be satisfied before a court should defer. The court could do something very similar to that here by keeping Chevron while clarifying the standard in terms that might make it less deferential than, for some judges, at least it has been in past cases. Alternatively, the court could adopt what's known as Skidmore deference for agency statutory interpretations. Skidmore is an older, somewhat less deferential standard that calls for reviewing courts to give agency statutory interpretations weight or respect, depending upon the presence or absence of various factors like thoroughness or consistency or the validity of the agency's reasoning or all of those factors which give the agency's interpretation the power to persuade if lacking the power to control. In theory, for that matter, the court could decide that courts should review interpretations of statutes de novo. I'm skeptical that that's what the court will do, but it's at least possible.
Got it. And I know what's being talked about in the Supreme Court. It's not explicitly a tax case. Are there regulations that could be impacted depending on the Chevron ruling?
So whatever the court does, for most tax cases, I'm skeptical that Loper-Bright and Relentless will make a big difference. For one thing, most tax rules and regulations never see the inside of a courtroom. Second, though, most tax rules and regulations involve what some people would describe as interstitial questions of the sort where courts are most inclined to defer. The most likely situation in which Loper-Bright and Relentless might make a difference in the tax context are the really big cases, where Treasury and the IRS arguably are pushing the boundaries of statutory meaning to accomplish some policy preference that can't otherwise get through Congress. That said, Treasury and the IRS tend to be pretty policy-focused and purposivist in interpreting the tax code, whereas the courts these days tend to be at least somewhat more textualist than they once were. So that textualist purposivist divide, when put together with a somewhat less deferential posture on the part of the courts, could lead to a somewhat lower win rate for Treasury and the IRS when their interpretations go to court. I don't really see this as altering Treasury and IRS regulatory practices all that much, though. I suspect this will only make a difference in the tax context at the very margins.
And then I know we're kind of waiting to see the ruling. Like, what are you specifically looking out for as we're kind of in this waiting period?
After the oral argument, it's really hard to say what to look out for. Again, I think there's a fairly strong sense that what the court will do is keep and Kaiserize Chevron rather than overturning it, at which point the devil will be in the details of what the court actually has to say. Of course, if the court were to overturn Chevron, then we'd be looking at, well, what are they replacing it with? Are they replacing it with Skidmore? Are they replacing it with de novo review? And then what is going to be the impact on some other doctrines? These are the things I'm looking for.
So when the dust settles, what do you think the impact will be in terms of the balance of power that you were talking about before between government agencies and the courts? Is it possible that there won't be much impact?
One thing I will say is that throughout the discussion of Loper-Bright and Relentless, and for that matter, over the past few years with respect to Chevron in general, there's been a lot of overheated rhetoric about Chevron and whether overturning it would either undermine government's ability to adopt useful and helpful rules and regulations, or whether overturning Chevron will return government to its proper place in Congress. A lot of that overheated rhetoric really is overheated. I think whatever the court does, even if the court overturns Chevron, the results simply are not going to be that dramatic in terms of real-world governance. The doctrine may change, and that's going to alter how people write litigation briefs. And again, at the margins, it might make a difference in terms of whether a particular rule is upheld or falls upon judicial review. But overall, I really don't think Loper-Bright and Relentless, regardless of what they do, will have that much of an impact on the day-to-day of administrative governance.
That was Kristen Hickman, a law professor at the University of Minnesota, speaking with Aaron Slowey. And that's it for today's podcast. You can find up-to-the-minute news and the latest tax and accounting developments at our website, news.bloombergtax.com. That website, once again, is news.bloombergtax.com. Today's Talking Tax was produced by myself, David Schultz. The editor for today's episode was Martha Mueller Neff. From Washington, I'm David Schultz. Thanks for listening.
In a global tax landscape that changes by the day, it's what you don't know that can leave you exposed. At Bloomberg Tax, we provide market-leading intelligence and practical applications to help tax professionals work smarter, faster, and more accurately. Our solutions provide the insights you need for game-changing outcomes. To revolutionize your performance in real time, the difference is Bloomberg Tax. Learn more at pro.bloombergtax.com.